China has finally enacted a civil code after decades of failing to do so. Dubbed an encyclopedia on social life, the new code passed by the National People's Congress on May 28th is a gigantic piece of legislation that is now officially the biggest among China's many laws and regulations. The code, which defines the rights and duties of China's 1.4 billion citizens, will come into effect January 1st next year and has implications for all areas of Chinese society, from consumers to investors to businesses. I'm Vincent Chow, a reporter at China Law and Practice and host of the China Law Podcast, a weekly podcast exploring China's business and financial sectors from a legal perspective. With me today to dissect China's new civil code is Ulrike Gluck and Michael Munzinger from global law firm CMS. Ulrike is managing partner and head of corporate, while Michael is a counsel at the firm's Shanghai office. In this episode, we'll be discussing the differences between a code and a law, the main takeaways for businesses and investors in China, the fascinating history of China's previous attempts at creating a civil code, as well as comparisons with the civil codes of other countries, namely Germany's, which is where Ulrike and Michael hail from. Ulrike, Michael, welcome to the China Law Podcast.
Thank you very much, Vincent, and many thanks for having us on your program today.
Yes, thank you very much. The same from my side.
Let me start with you, Ulrike. Can you give us a basic overview of what the civil code is?
Yes, the PRC Civil Code really is a massive code of law. It in total consists of seven parts named general rules, property rights, contracts, personality rights, marriage and family, right of inheritance and tort liability. In total, it has 84 chapters and 1,260 articles. It was adopted by the 13th National People's Congress on May 28, 2020. And it will only enter into effect at the beginning of next year on January 1st, 2021.
And how is a code different from a law?
A code or codification is a systematic combination of the legal provisions of a legal field in a uniform body of law. This should, in principle, exclude other sources of law in the relevant area and conclusively regulate the respective area of law, i.e., in this case, the PRC civil law. The principle of completeness also requires a very structured outline and a consistent set of terms. Basically, the PRC Civil Code is a combination of different laws relating to general rules of civil law, property rights, contracts, personality rights, marriage, etc. So of all the areas covered by the PRC Civil Code.
Why is a code needed to bring all these different laws together?
Well, because then there is one unified body which everybody can look at and can search if they have questions. Also, of course, there are currently already different separate laws, but with separate laws, there is always the problem that some of them are not consistent, especially if they are published by different regulators, for example, different ministries, etc. Also, in these different separate laws, in some for the same legal concept, different terms have been used, or also sometimes they're the same topics, they were repeated in different laws. And also, sometimes there are contradictions on specific topics between different laws and regulations. So to codify everything into one single code gives the opportunity to first make an amendment of certain provisions, an update to reflect more correctly the current legal practice and to deal with existing legal issues that have not been comprehensively dealt with. And it also makes it, so to say, easier for legal practitioners and basically everybody to look up the law on specific topics. And it is always more complicated if we need to look into four or five different laws and regulations rather than having one single codified piece of legislation where we can look up everything.
Okay, so let's move on to some of the key areas of the new code that is especially relevant for businesses and investors. Let's start with privacy and personal information protection. What exactly is new in the code in this area?
First of all, the Civil Code in Chapter 4 defines what privacy is. It is defined as the peace of a natural person's private life, as well as private space, private activities, and private information, etc., that a natural person does not wish to be known by others. And personal information is also defined as various kinds of information that is electronically or otherwise recorded and can identify a specific natural person separately or in combination with other information, including name, date of birth, ID card number, biometric information, address, mobile phone number, email address, health information and whereabouts information of a natural person. Also, chapter 4 of the PRC Civil Code expressly lists certain behaviors that are deemed as infringements to the right of privacy of others. For example, without express consent from the right holder, no person shall disturb others' private peaceful life by phone calls, SMS, emails, or flyers, shall not enter, make pictures or videos, or peep at others' residences, hotel rooms, or other private spaces. Also, it is forbidden to make pictures or videos, peep at eavesdrop or make public others' private activities, or process others' private information. So this is, in my opinion, a big step forward, because it is the first time that this is regulated so clearly.
And what is the difference then between the PRC Civil Code and an existing PRC law, such as the Cybersecurity Law, that also covers data protection and privacy?
The PRC Civil Code is a bit different, or the purpose of the PRC Civil Code is a bit different from the purpose of the PRC Cybersecurity Law. The PRC Civil Code contains provisions on the protection of personal information and provides guidance on how to collect, use, and protect personal information. The PRC Cybersecurity Law is an administrative law which focuses on the supervision of network operators and applies to the construction, operation, maintenance, and use of networks, as well as the supervision and administration of cybersecurity within the PRC. Whereas the PRC Civil Code regulates all information processors regarding their collection, storage, use, processing, transmission, etc. of personal information, and has a focus on personal information as a civil right. So in a nutshell, the PRC Civil Code grants data protection rights to the individuals, whereas the PRC Cybersecurity Law focuses on supervision of network operators and protection of the interests of the state.
We can really see the government's focus on this area, because there are two other new laws on the horizon as well. Just last week, the first draft of the Data Security Law was published for public comments, and there's also going to be a Personal Information Protection Law coming out sometime in the future.
Yes, definitely. The Personal Information Protection Law is already on the horizon, and that will be another administrative law, which also has, a focus on supervisions and sanctions in case of wrong doings. According to the sources from the Legislative Affairs Commission of the Standing Committee of the NPC, the draft of the Personal Information Protection Law has already been formulated and will be submitted for discussion at the session of the Standing Committee as soon as possible, and it will probably also be released within this year.
Let's move on to another area in the code, which is personality rights. Definitely one of the key achievements of the Civil Code, because there was no standalone law governing personality rights before. So let me bring in Michael here. Can you explain what personality rights are and what the code says about these rights?
Yes, I'm happy to do so. So what you said is completely right. There has not been any standalone statute before introduction of the Civil Code and focusing on personal rights. There have been a few provisions in the general principles of the PRC Civil Law, but it was really not comprehensive at all. So actually, the part on personal rights in Chapter 4 clarifies now the content, the limits, and protection methods regarding personal rights, and basically contains now of 51 provisions. This part and 43 provisions are completely new, and 8 provisions basically had been included in the general principles before, but they have been amended now. And can maybe give a short overview over a few aspects on this part. And for example, there are provisions on organ donations and human genes and embryos, which basically provide general rules on those topics. Too many details, but also that all this is protected, actually, and protected by the state. Then there are several provisions also on preventing and prohibiting sexual harassment. And there are criteria, for example, for identifying sexual harassment, and stipulations also which obligate entities, for example, companies or schools, to prevent and prohibit sexual harassment. Another focus in this field is, for example, that now specifically also natural person's portrait and voice are protected. And the Civil Code also expressly stipulates now that infringements on portrait and voice by means of any high technology, for example, artificial intelligence or any voice-changing technologies, that they are expressly prohibited as well. Yeah, and I think it's really quite significant that this chapter on personal rights is an own part now of the Civil Code, and that it's not included in any other area, for example, in the general part or somewhere. And I think this really shows that the government in China really wants to emphasize the importance of personal rights as civil rights, and that personal rights holders are protected by the law. And in case of any infringement of personal rights, the infringer is liable according to the Civil Code.
Certainly, the provisions that address these emerging technologies such as AI and these so-called deep fakes, where people's faces are transplanted or onto another person, these provisions are very interesting, especially in China, where it is often said that the rapid development of technology is really outpacing the regulations.
Yes, but I think in this regard, it really also must be seen how this will be implemented in practice later, to be honest. Because, I mean, especially artificial intelligence and face recognition, etc., are really present here in China, much more than in many other countries, I think. And I think, that must really be seen, whether this is more or less a statement simply, or whether this will have any impact or effect.
Let's move on to contracts, which is another key section in the code. Michael, can you tell us what is new in terms of contractual rights and obligations outlined by the code, and perhaps what businesses and investors should pay most attention to?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we can give a few examples. So Chapter 3 of the Civil Code, this is the one on contracts, this is based on the current PLC contract law, and also not too many, I must say, but as you know, likely, there are many Supreme People's Court interpretations on the contract law, for example. But also important aspects of those Supreme People's Court interpretations have been included now in the contract part. So this is quite remarkable. For example, one first item could be that, for example, weaker contracting parties had been further strengthened, or the protections for them had been strengthened.
I want to ask about the pandemic and what impact that has had on the code. Especially as the final few months of the legislative process for this code was actually disrupted by the outbreak. So are there specific provisions where the pandemic has played a part in influencing the language or the wording used?
Yeah, I think there are quite a few, actually. Let me shortly start. One novelty, for example, is Article 34 of the Civil Code. And this now expressly stipulates that in emergency situations, such as, for example, COVID-19 epidemic, I mean, COVID-19 is not expressly mentioned, but it's quite clearly referring to COVID-19, that if a guardian is unable to fulfill its guardianship responsibilities and if the ward is unattended, then the residence committee or village committee at the place of the ward's domicile or any other relevant organizations, that they shall temporarily provide the ward with necessary daily life care. And this is quite clearly, I mean, there have been stories, for example, in Wuhan, etc., that both parents were hospitalized and that then the child basically have not been supported properly. This is clearly related to COVID-19, I guess. And also similar stipulations are there, for example, when it comes to state procurement. Also regarding state procurement, now it's expressly stated that in case the state, based on necessities due to, for example, disaster relief and prevention and control of epidemics, issues mandatory assignments or state procurement order, the relevant other party must conclude the contract, actually. And lastly, I think this probably is the most important change, even or also the most interesting one, is that the concept of a change of circumstances, this is a doctrine which so far has only been provided for in the Supreme People's Court's interpretation on the PLC contract law 2. This is now expressly stated as Article 533 of the PLC Civil Code. And also there have been some quite interesting changes. For example, according to the stipulation in the Civil Code, it is not required now that the change of circumstances is not caused by force majeure. So it is now definitely expected that even if a party is subject to force majeure, that it can also assert to Article 533 of the PLC Civil Code and apply for an amendment or a rescission of the contract. The background clearly is because COVID-19 generally was considered as force majeure in most cases. I mean, you must also or always check the specific case, but in most cases, COVID-19 was force majeure. And so therefore, there were quite heated discussions among scholars here in China and lawyers, etc., whether COVID-19 can be a reason to refer to this change of circumstances doctrine as it is stipulated currently, because this expressly says that it cannot be force majeure.
The Chinese government and those who were involved in the making of the code have been very vocal in celebrating it as a milestone for China's economy and society. Ulrike, can you explain why the code is such a milestone?
I think it is a milestone in the sense that it's really the first unified civil law. And it does have an impact on basically all business activities within the PRC, also on companies located in the PRC, and also on everybody, on foreign companies located abroad, but which are doing business with PRC contract parties or are doing business in the PRC.
I want to ask about the legislative history of this code. Am I right in saying that this version goes back 5 or 6 years?
Yes, that's true. The drafting process of the current one started from March 2015. Before, actually, there have been in total 4 previous attempts to provide for a combined codification of the PRC's civil law. The first one was in 1954, then another one in 1962, then the third one in 1979, and the fourth one in 2001. All these previous attempts have failed due to various reasons. And this one was started to be drafted in March 2015. Then in December last year, a complete draft of the PRC Civil Code has been finally published for comments of the public. And the staggering figure of around 1 million comments has been collected. This also shows that how important the PRC Civil Code is, not only for business operators, but also for private individuals and for citizens as such.
And if we look at the civil codes of other countries, such as France, Germany, and Japan, theirs were enacted in the 19th century. So clearly China is very much late to the party in this regard. And what were the reasons for these previous failures?
Well, I think partially it's political reasons. And, you know, China had a civil code I think it was enacted in the 30s. But that was, of course, back then, completely different political system. And actually, this civil code then was taken along by the Kuomintang to Taiwan. And I think with some amendments, it's still in place to date. But parts of the reason were political reasons. There was, of course, big political changes in the last century in China. And that the first and the second draft were not enacted was also due to political changes. It was 1954, so they were busy with other things. The same in the 60s, there was the Cultural Revolution, so that was not the surrounding where a civil code was of any importance or at the forefront of the needs. And 1979 was probably still too early, because that was the beginning of the Chinese economic reform, and it was probably still too early to do such an eminent legislation as the civil code. So I do think that this decade is really, with the Chinese economy or 40 years of reform, I think it probably the perception was that now it's the time to also enact a civil code. And of course, such a comprehensive work of legislation cannot be done in half a year or a year. And there are many different ideas and also different concepts of law. And this cannot be done within a couple of months, but really it takes a long time. And so that is, in my opinion, the reason why it took that long.
And I do want to ask about one civil code in particular, which is Germany's, seeing as both you and Ulrike and Michael are from there. So what is the perception of the code among Germans today? Do people view it as an important part of society and of the law and of business? Or is it seen more as an archaic text from the 19th century?
No, it's actually the centerpiece of Germany's civil law. And this is it's the centerpiece of the German legal system. And other additional legislation was then built on the principles defined in this civil code. For example, the German commercial code, which was enacted later, contains only those principles and rules relevant to merchants. And as to the general principles, it relies on the civil code. So basically, the civil code is the basic piece of legislation, which provides all the principles and also all the, so to say, standard concepts. For example, for contracts, how does a contract come into existence? Its offer and acceptance.
Right. And in fact, the Chinese legal system in general was partly influenced by the German legal system. Is that right?
Yeah, I think indirectly, because Germany has a codified legal system, not a case law system. And if I remember correctly, I think back in the at the end of the 19th century, parts of the German law, they were also adopted in Swiss law. And then there were many Japanese law students, and they took it along to Japan. And then from Japan, it was further, because lots of Chinese students were studying in Japan, then it further came to China. And I had mentioned this civil code that was enacted in China in the 30s. That was basically also a reception from the German/Swiss/Japanese civil law system.
Okay, let's move on to our final question, which is about implementation of the code once it comes into effect next year. How big of a practical impact do you think the code will have on your work as practicing lawyers in China?
Well, I think it, of course, still remains to be seen how the PRC civil code will be implemented and enforced in practice. And only this will show the real impact of the new law. Also, usually you only see the real impact once there are disputes. And of course, it will be even longer until the disputes will then show up and be dealt with by the courts. So it will probably be a couple of years down the road until we see the real impact. But overall, I'm pretty optimistic. I mean, first, it's not as if the PRC civil code would introduce something completely new. Also, the PRC Supreme People's Court intends to publish an interpretation of the PRC civil code within this year, because each big and large and comprehensive codification always will have the issues that some items can only be stipulated in a more general and vague way. And it is then up to the practice and also up to the courts to identify some unclarities and provide guidance on these issues.
Yes, certainly that Supreme Court interpretation is something to look out for now before the code comes into effect. Let me give the final word to you, Michael. What impact do you think this might have on your work?
Yeah, I think, so my opinion, I think when you look at the civil court and at the new stipulation and also the amended stipulations, I think most of them are improvements compared to the currently existing laws. So I think in theory, it's definitely better than it's currently, and it's more detailed and also very important, actually, legal principles such as an agency without authority and an unjust enrichment has been added. Definitely, it must be seen how it will be implemented. And I also guess it will take probably a couple of years until you really can see it. And I'm also quite interested to see how this Supreme People's Court interpretation will look like and how many there will be. Whether it's like one general interpretation now referring to all chapters, or whether they maybe bring out different interpretations, one for the general part, one for the contract part, etc. So this will be interesting to see, I guess.
Okay, well, thank you so much, Ulrike and Michael, for joining me today.
Welcome, thank you.
Thank you very much for having us.
And thank you for listening to the China Law Podcast, a weekly discussion of China's business and financial sectors from a legal perspective. Make sure to check out our website, chinalawandpractice.com, to keep up to date with the latest Chinese legal and business news, as well as full access to a searchable database of English full translations of PRC legislation going back 33 years. We'll be back next week to discuss China's controversial new cybersecurity review measures and what it means for foreign suppliers. Stay tuned, and thanks again for listening.